Become a member of the Movie Geeks United family. Join us on Twitter at twitter.com/moviegeeksunite, Facebook at facebook.com/moviegeeksunited, subscribe to us through iTunes, subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/moviegeeksunited. You can also access our entire archive of content, including over 700 filmmaker interviews, at blogtalkradio.com/moviegeeksunited or at our official website at moviegeeksunited.net. Tuning in to this episode of the Art of Cinematography series. Tonight, we speak with Peter Menzies, Jr. Mr. Menzies has made quite a name for himself in the world of cinematography, particularly in the action genre, where he served as the DP for high-profile films like The Getaway, Die Hard with a Vengeance, The General's Daughter, The Incredible Hulk, Shooter, Clash of the Titans. Other films that populate his resume include The 13th Warrior, Hard Rain, A Time to Kill, Man of the House, and Playing for Keeps. Mr. Menzies spoke to us from Bulgaria, where he's preparing to shoot The Expendables 3, the latest chapter in the very popular franchise starring Sylvester Stallone.
You were in Bulgaria? You're about to start shooting Expendables 3?
We're a week out. We start shooting Monday week. Very busy condensed prep. It's been great so far.
Well, it's an incredible project. I mean, we keep hearing new news about it every single day. It just keeps getting bigger and bigger.
It is getting bigger and bigger, mate. It is. I'm really looking forward to working with Sly.
You've worked on so many great successful movies, but also kind of massive, complicated ones. And when you're prepping a movie like Expendables 3 that has all of these elements and complex action sequences, what is that process like? How much effort and time goes into preparing for that?
We have to break it down. And Patrick Hughes is directing. He's my director on the first unit, and we have Dan Bradley directing the second unit. So. And Dan and Patrick have just been riding all the action beats, and then Paul Hewen, the second year DP, and I just continually break it all down. It's just, you know, baby steps. Patrick and Dan and I, we really want to do as little CG as we can. Obviously, there will be a lot of CG, but we just want to keep it real. And I think a lot of my movies were done, like, the stunt movies, we've just done huge stunts that people can believe, you know. Like, I think if you, if it's all in CG, people just don't feel any sympathy for the actors.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, beyond the parade of, you know, famous action stars in the Expendables series, I think that's what people respond to, because it feels like it pure, like the old school action movies.
Absolutely, and these guys have done, you know, from Sly to Arnold to Mel, you know, they've been in all the classic action movies that we all grew up with. And so they know action, they know what the audiences want. So, you know, it's a very exciting project. We're very excited about it.
So tell me how this started for you, what your entry into loving movies, what that was. Was it your father and his work?
My father was a very successful commercial VP in Australia. Had an amazing commercial career. He never did any films, so you know, he's quite jealous of the life I lead in movies. He had his own production company, so he didn't, when the Aussie wave in the late 70s and 80s happened, he was running a company and wasn't able to go and shoot movies. My dad was running his company, and then so I got dragged in through my father, and his twin brother was the key grip, so it was sort of just a natural flow that I was getting to the camera department.
Mm. And what were there early movies that that you watched and you were particularly taken by and that you realized that the cinematographer was a big part of why you loved that movie?
I think, you know, the early Peter Weir films that Russell Boyd shot.
Mm.
And, you know, I just love those movies. I still do. And then I was lucky enough to, as my career started as an assistant, to work for Russell as an assistant and then later as an operator. And so to be, you know, working with somebody that shot these amazing movies that I used to watch over and over again was a great thrill.
Mm. And there's something about those Peter Weir movies. They're just hypnotic.
So I was lucky enough to work on Yves Living Dangerously as an assistant with Peter and Russell. And that was actually the last time I worked with Mel, which was a long, long time ago. So I'm excited to see Mel from this one after all these years. The world that Peter creates is a very, very, like, special collaborative, like, a family. He creates a family, and we all do our best work. And
how did you break in? I mean, you mentioned that you worked on the set of Year of Living Dangerously and a few other projects before that, but what was that breakthrough for you?
I have to say, you know, my father's contacts and helped me be introduced to Russell and David Cribble and John Steele and this team of amazing Australian cinematographers. My father knew Russell, my father knew David, and knew John. So it was, you know, sometimes you just get lucky, and I got lucky like that.
You know, you mentioned that, I mean, you're in Bulgaria now, as we mentioned, and your crew is beginning to assemble in advance of the shoot. Tell me about working with a crew. Is it desirable to you to really kind of spend time with them before the film starts and get that feeling of a family between all of you?
It is. It's increasingly more difficult to do because the prep for assistants and the operators is reduced as budgets change. But on this one, I'm very fortunate that I'm bringing some of my old crew from Australia here so they can work in this part of the world. So I'm bringing my Steadicam operator from New Zealand, Peter McCaffrey, and my assistant David and a key grip thing in. So it's like there's five or six Australians in this movie, which is just fantastic.
Well, and the style of your action that you shoot, I mean, so many action movies today, we're bombarded with jerky camera, and you can't tell the choreography of what's going on. But when I look at a lot of your work, you know, Die Hard with a Vengeance, for instance, it's so clean and crisp, and it doesn't look like the camera's trying to mask anything.
And to me, that just makes the action just believable. Like, if you're shaking the camera, it usually means you're trying to hide something or enhance something that's not there. So, you know, working with John on Die Hard 3 was an amazing journey. Like, John McTiernan is one of the great action directors of all time, and to be able to shoot a movie like that for him. And we would shoot so much of that just single camera. It would be like John would just want one camera in the right place to capture it. And it was, you know, he's just a master at that in his action, you know. We would have a couple other cameras for some bigger piece, but there was so much of that movie that shot single camera.
And that's an amazing, you know, that's my favorite Die Hard, and one of my favorite action movies, period. It's an amazing movie, and you're right, McTiernan is terrific. Tell me what that collaboration was like between the two of you.
Originally, I was hired by John to do a remake of Captain Blood with Alec Baldwin, and I was in very early prep with John to do that movie, and then it fell over to funding, and So Die Hard 3 came together very, very quickly. It was like we shut down from a couple of months for like a month or so, and then John called and said, hey, let's go to New York and do Die Hard. And we really didn't have a script. It was like Jonathan had written Simon Says, and it was just that script was being adapted into a Die Hard all the way through. Like, we didn't have a third act when we started shooting, really. So it was a lot of weekends, and John spending all night writing his movie. But, so it's a shame we didn't get to make Captain Blood, remake Captain Blood, but to go off and do a Die Hard for John McTiernan was an incredible opportunity. And I learned so much from John.
And then what you followed up Die Hard with another kind of massive success with The Time to Kill in a very different tone of movie. Tell me about kind of mapping out the visual look and the world of that movie.
Joel offered me the movie because he loved my use of color separation, like using color as a contrast, which I did in the early movies, like with lots of oranges and reds and yellows to really use the colors as a contrast. And Joel really responded to that, and he wanted, you know, the heat of the South and the Time to Kill to be beautiful, but, you know, just real. He wanted it to be pure, like extremely real but beautiful, I suppose. And he hired me really based on my use of color, which was extraordinary. So we followed that through in the movie. You know, there's incredible color separation through that whole show, but the pressure was on everybody because it was like everybody loved the book, everybody wanted that movie to be great, every actor that came, that incredible cast, everybody just worked. Like nobody would go to the trailers, everybody stayed on the set and supported everybody. That was like the closest sort of Peter Weir family feeling I've had, I think, was what the world that Joel created on A Time to Kill was extraordinary. He handpicked everybody in the head of the department, and it was his baby. He did an amazing job with that movie.
When you talk about the color contrast, was part of the thinking with that color contrast also the theme of the actual movie?
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. We're in the South, we're in Mississippi, we weren't far from Oxford. We're in a small town outside of Oxford, Canton, and it's the South, and I think all those colors work, and that's what Joel sort of responded to and was after. Was just a very, very rich looking movie, and again, like, very fluid. We had a huge ensemble cast, and to shoot in a fluid way that allowed the cast to almost treat it like a play. And there were some rooms where we would just let them just go wherever they wanted to go, or wherever Joel wanted them. And Joel was away from 12, but wherever Joel wanted them to go, we just had to be open to that. So it was, The Time to Kill is one of my favorite movies I ever shot, I think.
It's stunning. You mentioned.
I'm very proud of it. So.
You should be. It's a great movie. And actually, Mr. Schumacher is a good friend to the show too. So
I haven't seen Joel for quite a while, but that was his baby, and he was at the top of his game, and it was an extraordinary project for us all to work on.
When you're working with, because you mentioned the ensemble in A Time to Kill, I'm curious to know what your communication is with the actors, because obviously the director is the main guy in charge and the main conduit to the actors, but when do you need to step in?
We have a cinematographer. We're incredibly lucky and blessed because, I think everybody, all the actors, they all want to look very nice, so they, we always have a great relationship about, like, this is, if you could work in this zone, the light's going to come from here, and you can look amazing, and everybody wants to look good and not be put into a place that's going to restrict their performance. So we have to communicate with them that if they could work, play it against the window, it's going to restrict one pass, and they're going to look amazing. So the dialogue's always very open about what works for them, what works for us, and our time of day and our restrictions. So it's a very open relationship with it.
And great actors also, I mean, there's obviously the emotional technique, but there's also the technical aspect of it. I mean, great actors know how they're being captured and how to play to the positioning of the camera, don't they?
They absolutely do. And you can totally tell an actor who has done some television versus not television, because when they're doing their television and they've got to bang it out like pages and pages and pages a day, their technical knowledge of where they need to go and their ability to hit mark so they don't have to sit on the tape because it's out of focus or they step out of their light, like, they just know, like, it's that training, that TV training is amazing.
Mm.
The same as my operators, like an operator who's done some television versus an operator who's done no television, it's chalk and cheese, like, they're so organized, and the television is just the most amazing training ground of all.
Mm. Well, looking over your resume, too, I mean, these movies are so incredibly different. I mean, you go from a great drama like A Time to Kill and an action movie like Die Hard and the other ones that you've done, Laura Croft, and then you move to movies like Man of the House or Playing for Keeps. Does it feel like a relief once you get off those big action movies and go to something a little smaller and more intimate in scope?
Yes and no. Like, to work on Man of the House with Steven was just a joy, and he'd work with some of the great cinematographers of our time, so to be hired by Steven Herrick, and even though it was a small movie, and it was a project he really wanted to do, and that challenge of this marriage that directors and cinematographers have while we're shooting together, It's a great joy. So to work with Steven on small film like that, or go and then to work for the second time with Simon and Lara Croft, it's like, so directors are amazing people.
Yeah.
Truly amazing. But
yeah.
To do what they do in the workload and to keep focused and fight the battle, they're amazing, amazing people.
You know, I hear actors and a lot of people, screenwriters and directors, talk about how comedy is very difficult for them. It seems to be more difficult than drama in many ways. Is that true of shooting it as well?
It is. It isn't. Like, for us, for shooting it, it's still just creating the space to capture a performance. I would think for a director, it's probably a little more difficult comedy to capture those moments and keep the pace going. But it's like shooting big or small is still shooting. It's like the greatest thing you ever get to do is to shoot. And to shoot a small film or a big film, I did a TV pilot earlier this year up in Montreal, and I haven't done very much TV, but it was just a
yeah. Well, and plus when you're shooting a comedy, I would think that you have to resist the urge, because a lot of comedies aren't cinematic. They're almost shot like a sitcom, and you have to resist the urge to shoot it that way, I would think. So many comedies today look like sitcoms. They're not in any way cinematic. So is that part of the challenge, to make something like that cinematic?
It is, and again, it comes down to having a director who wants that vision. I've been fortunate in the comedies I've done is the storytellers wanted to look like a movie, not like a sitcom, as you said. And so we treat it as if it's $100 million action movie. We just approach it the same in every way. It's like creating this world. Whether it's comedy or like a drama like A Time to Kill, or action like Lara Croft or Four Brothers, the world with John Craig and Matt, people always want their movies to look right.
Uh-huh.
I think there's a genre there that more sitcom-ish, and then there's a genre that I fortunately get asked to do, which where they want their comedy to look like other films that I've shot.
Yeah. How much film do you shoot now?
I think my film days are over. Mm. I did some reshoot a few months ago in LA on two different movies, and I would say that was my last, definitely my last film, Anamorphic, on an LA stage was about 2 months ago, I think, 3 months ago. I think it's all, the labs are closing, we're embracing our digital world now. We're digital on this, whereas the other two Expendables were on the film. So it's a transition that's happened incredibly quickly as what happened to the editors in their digital cutting. They went from film to avid in a matter of months, you know.
Yeah.
We're going through that same transition.
Well, are you going to miss what film had to offer, or are you completely embracing the digital?
I think we'll always miss that magic, that little, you know, sending your cans of film off and having that whole chemical process take place. We'll miss that. Because especially in action films, you know, we still have a little ways to go with the cameras, but the cameras every day are being updated, and you know, I think on ours we're in the latest versions of the Red, and I think the days of not shooting action movies on digitals are passing very quickly. Mm-hmm. The pipeline's going that way, and the laboratories unfortunately closed. You know.
Yeah.
Technicolor worldwide doesn't process anymore, except I think in Thailand.
Does it allow you to? Is it not as cumbersome as film working in digital?
It is actually more cumbersome. There's more cables, and we have, you know, the DIT's position now, and you know, the cart and the temp, and it is more cumbersome than just getting a gorgeous television camera or an Alpex camera and picking up and going to shoot. It's a process. It is a much more involved process, the digital world, I'd say, but there'll be many times in this job, which I've been on the last few jobs to the producers, is these digital cameras saved us probably 2 hours, say.
Hmm.
To be able to shoot longer at the end of the day. They're so fast, and we can keep shooting them. Where film, we have to say, well, we have to go home now, but we can just change our look and look up tables and in our digital world, and you know, there's a huge benefit there.
Wow.
We have to keep shooting them. And you know, it does have more range than film, and it's here, and I have to say, they're gorgeous, you know. Some of the films are shot with the David Fincher's movie, they're absolutely gorgeous on digital. So.
Last question for you, and then I'll let you go. Thank you so much for giving me time. If you were to teach a class on cinematography, looking through the history of movies, which films would you choose to show them, your students, to kind of teach them lessons about the craft?
I think if you watched Apocalypse Now, you would see every type of shooting you would ever come across in your whole life in that one movie. So that and The Right Stuff, I think, would be those two movies. It's just the range of locations and night and day and action and dances. So I think those two movies would be a great reference for everyone. Something we constantly reference on this. You know, we sit and watch Apocalypse Now the other day. We're going to watch Full Metal Jacket tomorrow, I think, as a little group. And we watch those classic old movies. They're beautiful, absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, you mentioned Apocalypse Now, and that's Vittorio Storaro.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Vittorio Storaro, among his other many qualities, his use of color is amazing.
Absolutely. As most of the, a lot of the Italian cinematographers, I think, I really admire it, like Dante's work as well. You know, Dante's still doing amazing work. It's their use of colour. And a lot of it came from when, like in Australia, our budgets were very small. And so we have to embrace lamps that weren't the right color, or just working rooms that, you know, had a horrible neon sign. Like, we didn't have the money to change them, so we just embraced it, and it became our style, I think, of just working with what was there.
That's it for this episode of the Art of Cinematography series. For additional episodes, visit our website at moviegeeksunited.net/artofcinematography.